All right, Craig is here. My co-host Christopher Waples is here. We are the Grumpy Dungeon Masters, and we have a guest with us. Go ahead and state your name and what you do for the record, please, sir.
My name is James Weeks, and I am a recent game publisher.
Cool. All right. What game did you publish?
I just published a tabletop role-playing game of my own design called Source of Epics.
Source of Epics.
Where can we get this?
You can get it on Amazon now. I just got approved on DriveThruRPG, which that's my big excitement. Barnes & Noble. Cool. I was selling a special box set edition on my website, but those are going really quickly.
It is, in fact, on Barnes & Noble. I'm looking at it right now.
Now, I didn't tell you this, but if you want the best book print so far, go to Amazon.
Really?
It's a little larger. The paper stock is much thicker, and the words and the images pop right off the page.
I actually was not aware that these companies did their own printing. Like Barnes & Noble's and Amazon, they actually do their own printing. They don't buy from other printers? Or how does that work?
As far as I know, that they have their own printing. Like, I know that DriveThruRPG uses Lightning Press. Amazon has their own print company. But Barnes & Noble might be ordering from my print company, which is Ingram Spark.
All right. So the books will actually look different depending on where you get it from, then.
It does. The covers look different, and the spines are completely different. So you can tell where they got it from by what it looks like.
So Amazon has the best spines, I'm hoping?
DriveThruRPG has the best spine, but okay. Amazon has the best print paper.
I am way more concerned with spines. The first book I bought for 5th edition, it was toast within 6 months. Just the fucking spine fell apart.
Oh, you mean spine build or spine look?
The build, the structure, is it solid?
Oh, that's doesn't matter who you get it from. It's a good solid build. Good binding.
That's important to me. Yeah. I've had a lot of problems with printing issues with 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons.
Having to crack the spine to make copies of character sheets or something?
No, just falling apart from use.
Oh.
Like I still have my 2nd edition books, my 3rd edition books. They're all in perfect condition, and they have been used to hell and back. And my 5th edition book, within 6 months, it was just falling apart.
Cheaper spine? Was it the thread spine, or was it perfect bond?
I think the first printing of the 5e books were pretty bad. I knew a lot of people had issues with the books falling apart quite a lot. But they fixed that problem in later releases of the 5th edition, about the time when I started getting back into D&D. So a couple years into their run. And
rush printing.
Yeah.
They rushed through the printing and didn't do good quality work, maybe?
Yeah, unsure really. I know it's a lot better now. So
yeah, the quality and the structure of the book is better, but we still see printing errors all the damn time with them.
Yeah, I mean that always happens no matter what.
I'm waiting to hear from people finding typos that I and my editors didn't find, because it happens. I'll read a novel, I'm like, whoop, typo.
Yeah.
I know you had, we haven't had a chance to talk, but I was a technical writer, and still kind of am, as a profession, and there's no way you can catch everything. There's always going to be something there, no matter how many times you go through it as an editor, there's always going to be some mistake or some misformatted column or some incorrect header or footer someplace somewhere, so it always happens.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is to be expected, but what is not to be expected is two N's in the letter monster on the spine of a book.
No! Did that happen?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
When I was first putting mine out, I was in such a hurry to get it done. I misspelled my name.
Oh, wow.
My name is W-E-E-K-S, and I typed it so quick I put W-E-K-E-S.
Oh, no.
They sent me the proof. I'm like, everything looks, who is this dude? So I had to contact him and say, no, my name is spelled wrong. Of everything I mess up, I do that.
At least it was caught before it went to print.
True.
Yeah.
True.
So, yeah. So James, what is the book that you put out? And just tell us about that, and tell us about like what got you started on trying to make this book, and if someone were to purchase it, what's inside of it?
Inside of it, you'll find monsters and creatures that you need to what you'll encounter, over 200 incantations, spells. But what I did was I created my own language for the spells, just to have fun. It's kind of a nod to Skyrim, the runes in Skyrim.
Fus-ro-da.
Fus-ro-da, exactly. In this, instead of saying fireball, you say dia-ta-fe. And that sphere of fire, and all the incantations have their own language with it. So it'd be neat to hear people saying that one day, you know, Bol-Tok-Hal is bolt of lightning. And they get pretty long. It's a percentile base. You've got 10 playable races. Ooh, what else? 51 abilities to choose from. And where it got started was house rules. Jay and I were speaking earlier about house rules, that everybody you know plays Dungeons and Dragons and they have their own house rules, what goes, yeah, what doesn't go, what they've changed. And I just kept adding more house rules until one day I sat back, I'm like, you know, I'm just gonna make my own. And I worked on it for a stupid long time. It's embarrassing to say, but literally it took 30 years to get it done.
So, that's a long time to be working on it, but
it is. Well, I researched the abilities. I actually went to California and forged a sword to learn about blacksmithing.
Holy shit.
It was the worst sword the smith has ever seen.
Actually say that?
He did. When I was done, I was showing him this big knobby, lumpy looking thing, and I'm proud as hell. And he's like, that is pathetic. It's like, fine. He goes, well, you can keep it. But I learned about blacksmithing. I put that in the book. I had to do a lot of research to get these abilities the way I wanted them. So,
okay.
So my real question on it, what is the setting? Like, I've gone to the teaser gallery on the website, sourceofepics.com. And taking a look, so like I see Fawn, I see Minotaurs, Forest Giants, Kobolds, Harpies, and Orcs. So obviously it's a fantasy setting.
It is.
But what makes this one different than, say, Forgotten Realms or Dragonlance, the well-known settings, Tolkien?
I wouldn't say it is any different. It's just your typical fantasy. But you mentioned Dragonlance. There's a race I have in there called the Homunculi, and it is a specific nod to the Kinder, my favorite race ever created. Tasselhoff Burf for life. I mean,
yeah. Wait, Waples here didn't know what a Kinder was until recently.
No. What? How?
I still think Dragonlance is everyone just basically jumping on top of dragons and trying to like joust each other in the sky.
Oh, yeah, I still have no frame, but it's lovely.
Frame of reference for Dragonlance. Yeah.
The thing is, he started tabletopping in 4th edition, and okay, there was no Dragonlance in 4th edition. They never printed it.
No.
And
there like Greyhawk, Forgotten Realms.
No, I don't even know what all's in 4th. What
all was? They had two major settings. They had they had a couple. They had Eberron, Dark Sun, what they call the Nintir Vale or Points of Light, mm-hmm, and then they had Fate Run, and that was it.
Dark Sun was rough. I loved it, but it was rough.
Yeah.
But they are just about to release Dragonlance for 5th edition here in a couple of months.
They just released new novels for Dragonlance too. I can't remember what it was called.
That was a whole ordeal. Let me tell you, there was lawsuits abound and everything for that.
It was. I've been following those two. They're on my list of favorite authors. Terry Pratchett, Neil Gaiman, and those two. And I met Tracy Hickman at Dragon Con, and I think I was dressed up as Wybie from Coraline.
Yes. Yes.
My
Why were you born?
Yep. Why were you born?
I was watching that the other night. I love that movie.
Yeah. It was interesting because Wybie's not in the book.
Yes, that is correct.
But they thought that viewers would be weirded out by her talking to herself. I'm like, what? They don't have a problem when I talk to myself.
So. Yeah. Kids talk to themselves. That's what they do.
Yes. And adults, you know, don't leave us out.
Yes, I do too.
But you see my name on here is Battle Kinder. Mm-hmm. Because I had a Kinder fighter that had a girdle of giant strength, and he carried this giant battle axe that was bigger than him. So I had my badge at Dragon Con, and it was Battle Kinder. And he came walking by to sign books, and he just saw it, and he stopped, and he's like, Battle Kinder? I'm like, hey. So he grabbed me out, pulled me up, put me in first of mine, and signed it. Got a picture with him.
That's fantastic.
He's pretty cool. Oh, okay. So the setting is just fantasy. I don't have anything specific. But what really sets this game apart is the abilities. It's how they're done. I have a check set and a skill set. The check set is basically what it says. It's to see if you achieve what you want to do. Using a weapon, we'll use that. If you want to hit somebody with a weapon, you roll your check set. And percentile base, you roll under your number. If you have a 60, you have to roll under a 60 to hit them. But your skill set, that's how skillful you are at it. And each set, the check set goes to 95. The skill set goes to 200. And you have to put points in each one to make yourself better at hitting and better at how many times you can swing per action round and how much damage you do when you hit. So you've got three ways to go with that. You can raise your check set so you're always hitting them, but you don't swing that often and do a lot of damage when you do hit them. Or you can raise your skill set to where you swing a lot and you do a lot of damage when you finally hit, but you're not going to be hitting often because your check set's low. Or you can go the middle ground where you raise them both evenly.
I actually really like this. So one of the problems that D&D has, and it's always sort of had, is your damage is really kind of limited by whatever weapon you use, because the damage type, the damage amount is based on whatever weapon you're using.
Right. You know? Well, in this game too, the weapons are divided into damage dice, what they call them. You've got half damage die all the way up to 5 damage die, which is like your monstrous mace, you know?
Yeah.
But if you pick up the ability weapon use 3 damage die, you can use any weapon in that listing. Any weapon that does 3 damage die, you can use. So if your long sword breaks, you can turn around and grab this hammer that's 3 damage die hammer and use that equally as well. But your skill set, your hammer is going to be slower, so you're going to swing less, but it's massive, so you're going to do more damage. You're going to have more damage bonuses.
Okay.
I don't have classes. I like to joke, say it's a completely classless system, you know, devoid of class. And
you'll find no class here.
No class at all. You'll find no class in this book. Because I felt that in most games with classes and levels, this class at this level is going to be almost a carbon copy of the same class and level of someone else's character.
Yeah. You know?
My fourth level fighter is almost the same as your fourth level fighter. The only difference is how we roleplay it. In this game, you can choose whatever abilities you want, provided you have the prerequisites or the proper brawn, which is the strength. And if you want to create a Geralt of Rivia and have a spellcaster with this giant two-handed sword, go for it.
Yeah, I know there are other game systems out there that do the no class system. I mean, Shadowrun is sort of a build what you want. I know GURPS is literally just build whatever the hell you want.
I loved GURPS.
Yeah, GURPS was fun. I always enjoyed it. It's a good, solid system.
It is.
But yeah, there are not a ton of them out there that are built however you want, because Dungeons & Dragons was the first thing, so most games just sort of carbon copied off of that, and here's your classes, this is what you get at whatever levels.
And they're still fun games, because it's easier to throw a character together in those games, you know?
Oh God, yeah. Yeah.
Making yourself a fifth level fighter, if you've done it a while, you can make a fifth level fighter or 10 minutes. Just throw it together. Boom. I'm good. I'm ready to go.
Yep.
Yeah.
But choosing what you want with this, you really have to know that character. You're going to have a unique character.
Yeah. There's an old MUD that I used to play. If you guys ever played MUDs or
I never played them, but I know what they are.
Yeah, right. And they had this really kind of cool system where they still had classes, so they had like I think 4 or 5 different classes, but you could level them up however you wanted. So like you could be like a warrior, cleric, thief, and like a wizard, and like a paladin or something like that. And you could go straight fighter, and you'd come out one way, or you can kind of like mix and match and kind of level up almost evenly if you wanted to. That gives you a different kind of character. I've always liked the systems that allowed you to kind of like kind of create what you want, because like I like playing a fighter in 5th edition, but I don't like multiclassing in 5th edition. It just doesn't seem like it works that well. I mean, like there are a couple good builds out there, you know, and you know, taking a 2 different fighter is always like a really good thing to do.
Every melee class has 2 levels of fighter in 5th edition.
But it's like you said, it's not really unique, you know. So like just staying core class and just building out just the core fighter class and nothing else works out pretty well. But like I like playing characters that have a little bit of rage issues, you know. Yeah. So like I like being on the field and like fighting and then all of a sudden having that like rage moment, a la like, you know, Dragon Ball Z kind of style, where the power now goes up through the roof and now they just start going rage berserk barbarian all over the place. Nice. Oddly enough, 4th edition had that as a class, but 5th edition doesn't have that kind of like flexibility to it.
Right.
I mean, you can kind of build it, but it's not going to be as effective as if you had a system that, where you could kind of like you said, build it so like you're swinging a lot and missing a lot, but that one hit's going to kill pretty much everything.
Exactly. If you raise your skill set, you're really skillful when you hit that spot, but you've got to hit that spot, you know, and somebody could be dodging all day going, ha ha, but when you hit them, they're not going to be laughing anymore.
There was an old anime that had that scene. There was a berserker that kind of started swinging on an elf, and she was just like dodging around, like standing on the blade, and then eventually he hit her, and the elf was gone.
Well, it's basically a Game of Thrones, the mountain, and I don't remember the dude's name, but the guy with the spear when they
Pedro
had the
McCaskill.
Duel. Yeah, when they had the duel. Have you watched Game of Thrones, James?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so there's a duel in the show, and the mountain is, I mean, he's the mountain. He's 7 foot tall, 400 pounds.
I know the mountain. I've seen the memes.
Yeah, solid muscle, just a monster of a man, but not particularly fast. And the guy he's fighting is, you know, my size or your size and very, very quick using a spear, and they're dueling, and, you know, the guy with the spear just fucks the mountain up. Yeah, and like the mountain's just laying on the ground, dying, bleeding to death, and he comes over there, gets within reach of the mountain, getting ready to stab him, and finally the mountain gets a hold of him.
Oh.
And it's a gruesome scene, let me tell you.
Once the big guy gets his hands on you, it's over. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Did you guys ever watch Alien vs. Predator?
The movie? Sadly.
Yeah. So There's 3 predators in the film, and one of them was a big, bulky, tall predator with lots of muscles. And that's me too in real life. I'm 6'9". So being in the situations like similar to that, where like the second you get a hold of somebody, you now have control of the fight because you're 2 foot taller than them and you're 100 pounds heavier. You could get the win. You just can't let them go. So in the Alien vs. Predator, there's a scene where the predator is fist fighting with an alien, and the predator is absolutely destroying the alien because it got into melee range. The big guy grabbed a hold of it. And it's like choke slamming him and, you know, pile driving him and smashing him into walls. And then he decides to like throw him across the room for whatever reason. Uh-huh. Okay. And the second he does that, I was like, oh God, you're going to lose now.
Yep.
And sure as shit, and that alien was like, okay, I'm free now, and scurried around and killed the guy. It was just, why'd you let him go? Just hold on to that tail. Just keep smashing it back and forth. Do the Hulk Loki thing. Just keep doing that until it stops moving.
Yeah. Don't let go until it's putty.
Yep.
My cousin's an UFC fighter. He just debuted a couple of months ago. Won his first fight with a knockout in the first round.
Nice.
So I've always watched it. We watched it together. And we've seen that in the octagon. The big guy gets a hold of the little guy, starts doing grappling, has him good, but then he throws him, does like a shoulder throw, and loses it. It's like, oh, man. Because the little guy's down there. He's got room now to punch and kick and do whatever he wants to.
Yep. I am, by the way, the biggest UFC fan you're ever going to fucking meet. So if you want to talk about UFC after the podcast, I'm all for it.
Check out Kevin Thunder Kent. That's Kevin. My cousin.
All right. I watch every pay-per-view. I don't always see like the undercard matches and stuff, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but anyway. I watch as much as I can.
Yeah, it's my other addiction.
So you said the Source of Epics is basically your 30-year baby that you've been working on. So it's pretty much your own system for how to play tabletop games.
All the tabletops I've played over the years, I took what I liked out of them and threw them into this.
Okay. Is there a particular setting in the book as well too, or is it just like the rules on how to play?
It's just the rules of how to play.
Okay. So when you were working on like the balancing of the system and stuff like that, you know, you said again 30 years worth of playing it, so you obviously had a chance to kind of like weed out what was overpowered and what was kind of like, you know, too weak. You got any stories that kind of like where you put in a rule and like it was just too good to be left in there and it had to be removed?
My magic system. I'm a big fan of magic. Mostly I would play mages in Dungeons and Dragons. I just love magic. I wish magic was real. So I decided to make
How have you ever been in Disneyland?
Ooh, no, that's scary. I'm terrified of the mouse. I thought I'd start an open magic system. So what I did is these words I created, I just put them out and said, hey, make your own spells.
Mm-hmm.
And I had words like time and control. And one of my best friends took over the world. He started putting spells together while we're chess playing. I was like, Trey, shut up. This is bad. Don't. So I was like, okay, well, then I started having to make it where these tiles don't work with these tiles, you know? So he's like, okay, but then he still found ways to reverse time if something went back. I'm like, no, you can't. That's not okay. Then I was like, all right, well, then I'm just going to make a few spells. Because I thought making a list of spells would be confining people, you know, confining their creativity. Mm-hmm. But I soon realized some people's creativity is just massive. If you give them so much freedom,
yeah,
the things they can do. Eventually, after about 4 months of going back to Trey and saying, what can you do with this magic system? And slinking away going, Jesus, I can't believe he did that. I decided, right, I'm just going to write the spells. I'm just going to make the spells. But I kept the language, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I find sometimes too, like when we're looking at systems, like if you give everyone just like too much freedom, they can kind of go a little crazy. But if you just set a little bit of a confinement to like the system, you know, just enough where they have to still be creative, but they don't have to be overly creative, that it kind of can spark a lot of good things for like, you know, certain circumstances.
Yeah. Well, I left it open for creativity later. Because I use tile magic instead of scrolls. Each of these words, Arn, Fey, Cal, Don, they can be inscribed on a tile. You choose whatever medium you want, bone, rock, wood, doesn't matter. You can inscribe it on a tile, and then you wax those tiles together. Example I used earlier is Dia Ta Fey, Sphere of Fire. You inscribe it on each tile, you stack the three together, and you wax them. And there's basically your waxed scroll of tiles, but it's not complete until you, as the encounter, create your own capping tile and the release word. We test played that, and hey, what's the age rating on this show?
Oh, we you can say whatever the fuck you want.
Okay, cool. Because what we're test playing, Discover Games, that's the name of the comic store that I test played in Fayetteville.
Okay.
We're test playing there, family friendly place, and this guy made his little scroll tile, his tiles, and his capping stone was just he drew what looked to be somebody flipping somebody off, and his word was bitch. Okay. So we're sitting there playing, and he's like, well, I pull out my wax tile. I'm like, okay. And he would say, "Bon talk out, bitch!" Right then, he's like, "Oh, wait, Paul, man, you gotta tone that down." You know, and another guy, he thought it was neat, so he wanted to use the word "motherfucker." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's nice, but the more syllables, the longer it's going to take you to cast that spell." So leaving it open later, I can create tile magic, so they can still combine tiles and make their own spells. But I'm trying to find ways to limit that so people aren't reversing time and control the world.
Yeah, I know with first and second edition Dungeons and Dragons magic, it ended up overpowered. Like the low end spells weren't too bad, but once you start getting to things like Time Stop and Wish specifically, because those editions were very kind of rules light, so you just could open end shit without too much problem. I know the third, fourth, fifth, they sort of put hard limitations on what that kind of stuff could do. And I love the creativity of spells. I love the idea of being able to make your spells, combine spells, things like that. But there still has to be kind of hard limits on what you can actually do with that.
Yes.
I think Dragon Age, if you ever played that, was a very good video game in showing how to combine spells.
It was. I loved it.
Yeah, but without being super overpowered in the process.
I like the cantrips, or like Tasha's uncontrollable hideous laughter. That was my favorite.
Yeah.
Cleric spell. What was that? Command?
Yeah, command is still around.
Oh, man. What you can do with that one word?
Yep.
I loved it. My favorite was to command somebody to excrete.
That's a shitty thing to do to somebody.
Yes, it is. It's not just bowel movement. Everything. They would sweat. They would cry. Their nose would run. When I first did that at Titans, when we played in the back room, I didn't know what else to do. We were getting whomped. And I just looked at it. I was like, command, excrete. And the DM was like, oh, that sucks. Yeah, have fun with it.
I like the one that's a step above it, where you can give them a simple command of what to do, and they have to do that thing for you instead of just one word. Mm-hmm. We were playing my Owl campaign, and I was able to get that spell off on the monk, and I told him to jump out of the tree that we were in. And they're like, "Well, you can't give me a command that's going to hurt myself." I was like, but you're a monk. You could just react save and land safely on the ground 200 feet below everybody. He's like, God damn it. He jumped off.
Yep. I always like going with things like, go fetch me a donut. You know, because then they're out of the combat. They have to run off and go find a donut somewhere in the nearest town or whatever.
Yep. That fetch was something a friend of mine used. He was a ranger, and when things got crazy, he'd always carry a scroll around for command. It'd say command, and he'd shoot an arrow and say fetch.
Yeah.
There you go. I go, they're like, God damn it, and I'm running off.
Yeah, I'll see you after you come back from 600 yards away or whatever it is.
Yep. If you can find it. I mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So part of your book that I was kind of like reading on your site, you had a bunch of, you said a selection of beasties. What are the beasties?
Yes. There's probably about 40 odd beasties, and includes manticore, multiple types of trolls, giants. I tried to pull things. Okay. It's called Source of Epics. Not because the book is the source of epics. It's so grandiose if I'd say that, right? Very big-headed. The source are the players, but also the epics. My degree is in epic literature, and I love Gilgamesh. I love the Odyssey. So I put in things like the mermaids, the Cyclops, Polyphemus,
right.
Things right out of those epics. Mm-hmm. And the first module I want to release is probably a retelling of Gilgamesh, where you go through as Gilgamesh looking for, you know, eternal life. So I tried to put beasties in there, and some of them are crossed. I mean, everybody's heard of Medusa, but they didn't know that she was of a race called Gorgon. So my Gorgon is a male Gorgon in there, just to switch it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. At the same time, I can see it's not all complete Greek literature. You've got the kobolds and the orcs in here as playable races, at least.
Well, orcs and kobolds aren't playable yet. That's
okay.
I've got four new races I'm going to put out in the next book. Lost Elves, Dune Dwarves, The Returned, and Hybridons. And then I want to put some... You could still play them. I mean, they're built. You build the beasties and creatures exactly how you do a playing character. So if you want, you could say, hey, you want to be a kobold? Go for it. Because, Jay, you know how I love kobolds.
I do.
That kobold in there is based off Nunzio.
Nunzio, yeah.
Yep.
So, I do love the picture of the orc, because I just looking at the picture, it looks like she was just about to like eat like the pork chop she has in her hand, and like something's coming over the hill towards her, and she just finished her like,
yeah, yep. It's just like, ah, shit, here we go.
So with the monsters and stuff like that, you said you can kind of build them out like the player characters. Do they still have unique abilities assigned to them, like Medusa with the petrification?
Or... They do have their unique abilities. Yes.
Okay.
Are
they very deadly, or like are they kind of like well, if you just look at the Gorgon, are you immediately stoned, or is it like a save system to it?
You do get saves. I call those tolerances. So yeah, you got your death tolerance, your psychological tolerance, your innate tolerance, and your incantation tolerance.
Yeah. Okay. So what is sort of the lethality of the system? Like you've been playing long as I have, you had some games like Boot Hill back in the day that were just super lethal. You might as well make four characters before you even start the game. And then we have current, like 5th edition, where it's very hard to actually kill a character.
Except if you're me.
Unless you're Chris, who somehow magically kills 6 of them every game session. But...
So... What was that? What's the...
Yeah, just sort of how lethal is the system? Like, is it easy for a character to get killed if they're not cautious? Or are you truly an epic like Gilgamesh who really and truly just nearly can't die?
Well, as with most tabletop RPGs, it really depends on the die rolls, doesn't it?
Sure. There's always the risk of the die rolls, but some systems are just... more lethal than others.
With our test playing, it's pretty balanced combat. One of the biggest complaints I got was that combat is a bit convoluted, because you have defensive moves too. You've got parries, you've got dodges, you've got blocks, you've got shield use.
Mm-hmm.
So in combat, somebody would attack, and then somebody's like, well, I can parry, you know, or I can block. And they thought it took too long, but it did well. So now
like Dungeons and Dragons is the most simplified gaming system out there. It's you roll an attack. There's no defensive roll. You just have an armor class.
Right.
It's that simple. And it does flow smoothly. It flows quickly, but it also is the most unrealistic thing you can think of.
Well, that's what I wanted is realism. In D&D, I don't think I've ever replaced my armor.
Yeah, well, once you have the best set of armor that you can get, you know, if you're a fighter, you just want the heaviest plate armor that you can get with as many plus magic on it as you can get. Otherwise, once you get to that, you're never replacing it.
Yeah, and it never takes damage.
Yep.
In this system, one full page of my character sheet is armor, because it takes damage.
So you have to, you actually have to have a whetstone to repair your weapons. Your armor needs to be repaired regularly.
You have to get the skill armor optimization or armor repair. And you've got to have it fixed. And I've modified it a lot. When we first started test playing, somebody lost an entire suit of chainmail in the first fight. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to have to fix that one. That was too much.
I've seen that happen in real life, too.
Yeah.
There was a kid that went out to Shadow War or LARP, and he had just bought like this chain shirt and this chain coif. And he's running around all happy with it, and he's like going crazy because, like, oh, I got this new chain. And then, like, someone did a thrusting attack. And now the game we play, it's basically PVC pipe with, like, pool noodle foam around it, covered in gaff tape.
James knows all about it. He played.
No, for the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
For the audience.
Yeah, I started LARPing in 91. So.
So someone just thrust it at him with this pool noodle. It caught, like, right underneath the armpit. And it caught the chain perfectly and, like, ripped the chain shirt in half.
Oh,
and the whole thing fell off. No, he said it was steel, but it had to have been aluminum.
It had to have been. That,
and like, it just fell apart.
I've worn steel armor, steel chainmail, and you're not tearing that. You're not damaging that with LARP safe weapons. But
right.
Aluminum, yeah, you could pop a link and then the whole thing could just sort of come apart.
Yep.
And like I watch it, I was just like, oh, yeah, it sucks. All right, 10 damage. Yeah. You're dead.
Sucks to be you.
Yeah, that always has been a frustration on 5th edition. There's no durability anywhere, you know. Whenever I kind of like in downtime, I'm always like, you know, oh, I'll just fiddle and repair my gun, keep it clean and stuff like that with the current character I'm playing. You know, it's just, but it's like a passing thing. It's not like a requirement. I don't even know if there's any variant rules for it in the DMG.
No, even I know for sure with 2nd edition, there wasn't anything like that. It's always just been sort of a secondary thing. You're expected to buy a whetstone just to say that you have it. That way, when you're at camp or whatever, you're repairing your stuff.
I remember in 1st edition, I thought it says something like every so many campaigns, you're expected, if you haven't replaced your armor, to spend the gold to replace it.
Yeah, no. First edition, like, I did get to play, so it might have those rules.
Yeah.
But second did not.
Weapons take damage, armor takes damage. But jumping to the LARP real quick, my favorite thing, I work chainmail, I work leather, I work steel. Most of that was from just doing it for fun, but it really came in handy making this game because I knew what I was doing, I knew what I was talking about. But my favorite part of LARPing was actually really fixing people's armor that broke on a field battle. I had a pocket kit that had a little hammer and everything that can really fix somebody's armor if they popped a rivet or something. And then I had one of those rolly kits from the sewing machine, rolly kit stuffs, that had other stuff. And then I had my big box. But I'd carry my pocket kit to field battles, and somebody would be like, oh, damn it, I dropped a ring or something like that. I'm like, yeah, hold on a second. I'd pull it out. And I'd fix it really right there. Like, you really just put a link in my armor. Yeah. You need two more. Hold on. You know? They're like, you're seriously doing this? I'm like, yeah, man, I love it. And so I'm like, do you have a tag? I do. I have fourth level armor smithing.
Here, yeah, you got to have that armor smithing skill.
Yep. Here it is. Every character, every LARP character I've ever played has armor smithing, armor repair.
That's fantastic.
I always like going to cons and seeing the cosplay medics.
Yes.
The guys basically go around and basically they can repair like costumes for the cosplayers that are there. Like if a girl like pops something in her dress or something like that, he has like the safety pins and whatnot to put it back together.
They've hot glue gun, re-glue stuff. Every color duct tape you could have. I mean, yeah, those guys are awesome.
Yeah, but, and like I actually went to the Raleigh Con, I think it was. I can't remember the name. And there was like three or four that walking around, like they're actively out there fixing people's stuff all the time. It's great.
I never thought of that.
I cosplay Deadpool. I've got many Deadpool cosplay outfits, and Beck and I are roaming around. Beck is my wife, and she was playing Miss Marvel, and I was Deadpool, and I'm jumping around. I got a tear in my inner thigh, and it was embarrassing because it just kept getting bigger. But whatever, I'm having fun. And this dude comes out of nowhere with black and red duct tape. He's like, you want me to fix something? I'm like, yeah, man. And he did. He taped me right up. He's like, I can stitch it. I'm like, no, the tape would look cooler. So I had this duct tape left leg, and it worked great. I bought him a beer.
That's cool.
Yep. That's fantastic.
So what do you have planned? You said that you, in the next book, you're going to release more monsters and more races and whatnot. And possibly a module.
More monsters. I'm working on a synergy system where if you have this ability and this ability, they work better together. So still working on that right now.
Okay.
But I have the mini modules that I've written that I use to test play that I want to write up and put out.
Okay.
Yeah, Chris knows a little bit about that, about writing modules, because he's written a couple of different modules and gotten them published on the DM's Guild, which it's basically the Dungeons & Dragons version of DriveThruRPG.
Nice.
It's all owned by the same company.
Yeah.
It's all owned by DriveThru.
Yeah. What is it, One Bookshelf? They're now combining with Roll20 or something like that?
Yeah, I saw that. I'm not 100% sure what that kind of like means, but I know like you can put up Fantasy Ground modules. So people can just import your modules that way. So I'm guessing it's probably something similar to that, where like you can put up Roll20 modules.
Yes.
Automatically, like, you know, pre-populated with all the systems and monsters and character sheets and what people would need. And they can just buy that from DriveThruRPG or DM's Guild, what have you, know, or whatever system they're using.
I love the website, and I like that they're combining. When they combined with One Bookshelf, it was amazing. I have Exterrans that I'm gonna. That's gonna be their own book. They're not gods. They're just from another plane. If not for them visiting us, we wouldn't have the incantations we have. Their plane is just chock full of magical energies. And some of those Exterrans are attuned to a certain incantation. My incantations are divided into foci, different focuses. Air, Arn, Fae for fire, Dawn for mind, Kni for water. And there's 10 of them. So this certain Exterran will be attuned to that. So he'd be an Arn Exterran. Almost like Djinns or Ifrits.
All right.
So when they come through, you get a strong feel of, wow, that's a lot of Fae coming from that person. So I'm gonna put those out. I didn't want to make them gods. You guys remember when a certain coalition attacked Dungeons and Dragons for having devils and angels in
there? Yeah, we know all about that. Yeah, the
deities and demigods.
Yeah, that's when it kind of first started. I was trying to think of the satanic panic that went on in the 80s and through the early 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I just didn't want to deal with that. So I just called them Exterrans.
I can tell you at this point, you don't have to worry about dealing with that kind of nonsense. There's always going to be a tiny handful of morons out there who cause that kind of grief. But for the vast, like, Stranger Things. Have you even watched Stranger Things?
Yes.
Yeah, like Stranger Things is more or less put that into the public view about the satanic panic. And like Dungeons and Dragons still uses the terms gods and devils and demons, and it is the most goddamn popular thing in the world right now.
Do they? They still do that? Because
No, they're gods, devils, demons. They're all still around. They're all part of it.
Nice, because I know they was it Fiend Folio or
yeah the Fiend Folio was from first edition,
because they had to recall that and reprint it with certain things not in there.
But you're also talking about this. A lot of that stuff was printed in the 70s and the early 80s.
Yes,
you know, when they actually had a little bit of clout, when the religious right, had a little bit of clout, had some power. They've really fallen off the power train, especially with social media. Like, it's not an issue anymore.
Well, maybe I'll put my gods out because I have a whole pantheon ready to go.
Yeah, you can do that and have no issues at all with it.
Awesome. Yeah, you're not going to have any issues nowadays. People understand, I think, much better now
that it's just a game.
That it's just a game, and it's fantasy, and it's just, at the end of the day, it is just a game.
I had my first book fair yesterday, which was amazing. I had a blast. And it was in a small town, and out of all the people that came by and had questions and talked to me about it, I only had one person come up and go, what is this? I was like, it's a tabletop role-playing game. She's like, oh no, we're not having that. And I was like, have a good day, as she walked off, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I don't need to be rude. I just kind of giggled, like, you don't have to have it. Have a great one.
But at the same time, you are, you know, it's a small town in rural Georgia.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, where I live, I'm in rural Alabama. There's a lot of ignorant folk around here.
Okay.
But I don't care what they say. They have no power.
Yeah, it was just one person. And I got there early, and I'm hanging out with these two guys. We're setting up. And later on, I work with them to help fix the electrical work. The fans weren't working. The lights weren't working. So we're fixing that, looking for GFIs and everything. And later on, one of the guys I'm talking to, and he's like, well, he said we could do something because we have the mayor's approval. I'm like, oh yeah, who's the mayor? He goes, the other guy that we were working with. And I'm like, oh what? I'm sitting there making these jokes with the mayor. It's pretty nice. So they've invited me back to do a once a week Monday night gaming there. I could bring my game or bring any other game. So we're working that out, and that's going to be awesome to have a gaming night with the mayor.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, spread the love, teach people about gaming.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The vast majority of people you talk about gaming, they're going to say, oh, I love Monopoly.
Yeah, or Life. I play Life all the time.
Yeah. But yeah, expand their horizons, show them there's a lot more out there.
It was fun. I really enjoyed it.
So you've said that you haven't actually written up like a campaign setting, mm-hmm. but you definitely, I could tell from talking to you, you have a lot of ideas of the setting.
Yes.
Do you have any plans at some point on releasing a book specifically devoted to the world that this takes place in, maybe the towns and the cities? Any maps and so forth?
I have 5 city maps ready to go and an entire continent map that is literally 6 foot by 9 foot rolled up in one of my closets.
Oh, all right.
But I'm trying to figure out how to break that one down and make a good map of it.
Okay. Do you have like detailed information on the cities or plans to at least release that?
I do. One book I have planned is just a book of maps. It's all okay. The cities and the continent they're on. The cities are named. Certain buildings are marked already. Tells you what it is, who inhabits it. I know I have all the nobles that live there, ranking from down to the high merchants all the way up to the king.
Okay, so it's sort of a feudal society.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because things like that, that's, for me, that's really kind of what I look for in a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the setting of Forgotten Realms has always just sort of been your generic fantasy setting.
Right.
But then you have other ones like Dragonlance, which always just felt very much more epic to me. And it's they are both medieval fantasy societies, mostly based off of, you know, Tolkien's sort of fantasy setting, feudal societies, but at the same time, they still feel very, very different.
They do. And I agree with you about Dragonlance being epic. I mean, with the Knights of Salamnia and the rest, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I loved the Knights of Salamnia. Remember Swift Arrow?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I based him off of. He was a knight of the Rose, you know?
Yep. Yeah. A lot of people are going to be learning about Dragonlance here shortly, so I'm looking forward to that. Because a lot of the people started during 5th edition, a lot of the current player base, and they've never been introduced to Dragonlance.
There's not a realm that D&D put out that I didn't like. I mean, okay, Spelljammers.
They just released that for 5th edition.
I wasn't a fan of that. I just thought going to space was a bit far for me because I'm more of a fantasy guy. So, but to be honest, I never gave it a chance. I literally just wrote off like, space pirates, no thanks. It was a good movie, but I don't want to play it.
What was the one movie that had Mark Hamill in it as a...
The Guyver?
No, they were like space pirates flying around doing stuff, and Mark Hamill was like a fighter pilot in one of the shows.
Wing Commander?
Yeah, Wing Commander. That's me.
I actually own the DVD for that, of course.
Wasn't that a video game?
Yes, it was a video game, then they made a movie of it, and there was a short-lived one season, I think, cartoon of it.
Seriously?
Of which I own that, too, and I've still never watched it, but I own it.
I own every copy of the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon.
We were talking about that fairly recently. I just picked up a DVD with a bunch of the episodes, but I have never sat through the whole damn thing.
You haven't?
No, I watch episodes here and there on YouTube, but I have never sat through all of them.
I've seen every single one of them multiple times. Look, I got to tell you, one of my crushes as a kid was that thief girl.
Yep. Little red-haired girl who ran away from everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I've tried watching it. As an adult, it's kind of painful, man. Mm-hmm. It's rough.
Well, Dungeon Master was cool. I mean, he is
cool. He's like the fucking Yoda of that set.
I was about to say that. Yeah, he's like Yoda. When Neverwinter Nights, have you guys played that?
I have. Yeah, years ago.
My avatar, when I ran, that's when my friends, when we moved apart, when we grew up, you know, and everybody went somewhere else. That's how we played. I'd write dungeons on Neverwinter Night and invite them in, and when they first came in, they lost it because my avatar looked like Dungeon Master.
Oh, that's lovely. Come on in. Yeah, that video game is actually what taught me scripting.
Yes, yes. I actually just learned CSS and HTML coding.
Well, yeah, I learned a lot of it because of that video game back then.
I still have Neverwinter Nights Gold. People still play that now?
I have no idea. I guarantee there's at least a few people out there that are still on it, still building stuff.
I mean, you would have to have a system that could still run it. The problem is most old games just don't work on new operating systems anymore.
You'd have to get an emulator.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an online now game. Neverwinter Nights online.
Yeah, but it's not the same game. I think there's a website called GOG, GOG.com. Mm-hmm. They have old games. They have older games. I think Neverwinter Nights is on there. And those are all converted to work on newer PCs.
Well, you've got to tell me if Dungeon Runners is on that.
Dungeon Runners?
All of Neverwinter is on there.
This Dungeon Runners was an MMORPG, very short-lived, maybe about 9 months. And if it's an
MMO, it's probably not.
Oh, it was the best. It was sarcastic. You started very small at first level, and as you leveled up, you got bigger. You had like the cardboard sword of not cutting. I mean, everything was a joke, and it was hilarious. Didn't last long. I'm so sad. I'm looking at it right now.
When it comes to an MMO, there are people out there who do like keep MMOs running. I know Star Wars Galaxy was an MMO that came out, was super popular, and then failed. Mm-hmm. And there's still a small community that are like hosting their own servers and their own hacked version of the game.
Yeah.
So they can still run it as an MMO.
I'm on a few boards for it, and I can't find anything. Somebody had a private server running for a little bit, but they had it shut down. So
Yeah. I had a friend, a roommate about 10 years ago, and he played EverQuest, but he played a very specific version of EverQuest that only ran on Macintosh systems. Ooh. And only a certain brand of Macintosh systems, and had a community of 2,300 people. And that's all that he would play. Wow. For like 3 years.
I think
so. If there's enough want out there, there's someone that's doing it.
Yeah. I said 30 years it took me to write this, but that's somewhat of a falsehood, because I had to restart almost from scratch about 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. My computer, I didn't know anything about computers, and it quit working. So I took it to a very popular place, and they fried the two hard drives and my motherboard. Oof. And when they told me about that, when they came out and had me sign the waivers, I literally was crying, because I didn't have a backup.
Yeah, everyone learns a lesson once,
yep,
man.
I did. I now have a 2 terabyte hard drive external backup. I've got 4 the USB sticks that have backups on them in a drawer. But I was standing there crying, and I thought, there's nothing I can do. So I drove home frantically, ran in the house, ran downstairs. And in my basement, I've got this 4x6 wipe erase board where I threw all my ideas up. Mm-hmm. And I started writing this before real computers. It was on one of the little brother typewriter things. And everything was saved on the 5 1/4 floppy.
Mm-hmm.
But I would print everything out and kept that. So I grabbed all my paper files and immediately just started writing everything I could remember on that wipe erase board. And almost had to start fresh. I mean, everything I can remember, everything I had printed out.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. You're like the dungeon master who's been running the same campaign for 30 years.
Yeah.
Just notes upon notes upon notes that you've just collected over the years. And you're the one guy who actually decided to print it.
I've lost my share of documents that I'm working on, working on something for a day and lost something somehow. I remember I had a deadline one time and I wrote it and I lost it. And I was like, I have to recreate the whole thing. Like, the file got corrupted and I can't recover it. So I was like, I'll just rewrite it, give me another day or two. And I'd like to rewrite better. Sometimes the loss of things can also lead to better, tighter creativity as well too. Mm-hmm. It's not always a negative thing. Sometimes you'll lose something from your first draft, but it does suck. Like, the feeling is the worst.
Yeah.
You know,
but once you get through that, I did have a lot of epiphanies rewriting it where it's like, I don't know why I was doing that. It works better this way. So
it was also a good
thing. It was a harrowing moment, but it turned out good in the end.
Yeah. And I think that's why those events exist, and kind of like the chaos of life, because like it may work, it may look like it's perfect, but usually that second rewrite is the better form of the product.
Yeah, so. it's a very common thing for writers to write it down the first time, then you actually write it again, and then you send it to an editor, and then you write the fixes for it. And at that point, you kind of have to stop and just print the goddamn thing, because writers are notorious for just continuing to fix it. And it will never actually get printed if you just don't print the damn thing.
I probably wouldn't have this thing out there if not for my wife. I just kept nitpicking. Oh, I got to change this. So I got to change this. And she said, it looks great. People test playing love it. Just do it. But I was terrified, because it's a double-edged fear, success or failure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what would happen if I super succeed. I don't know what would happen if people start looking at it going, this is a piece of shit. So,
Yeah.
I'm struggling with that right now too. I wrote a sequel to my first release that I had for my first module I put up on DM's Guild. Mm-hmm. And like, I ran into problems. I've had to rewrite a bunch of stuff, and I'm still rewriting stuff, and I'm still running into issues. And I'm just like, at some point, I'm just gonna just bite the bullet and just release it, because I'm never gonna be satisfied with the end result of it. Yep. And at the end of the day, you know, I want to be happy with it, but if I sit there and just nitpick at it forever, it's never gonna get completed. So. That's the struggle that I'm running into right now. And so I can kind of understand that.
I'm looking forward to hearing people's comments. I want to hear the gripes. I want to hear what didn't work, what did work, because that's the only way to really make it better.
That's literally our second edition. Yeah, that's literally our whole podcast. We bitch about the things that we don't like in D&D.
Look, when I was test playing, this guy, he took a Minotaur, put her in the tin can, the full filled plate, and made her a Zencaster. Zen's health, where you can give or take health, unstoppable. Unstoppable. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know how to fix that. Because, well, it also was the people fighting, it was like we were doing arena battles to test combat. There was. Mm-hmm. One person was playing an elf who had bow and arrow. It was just an archer. And there was a gnome that was a dagger user. The person was a fireball caster. They just straight fey encounter. And they could not damage, you know, they're all fighting each other. The Minotaur is standing over there just sucking health from people. So they start shooting at it. And the arrows are like, tink, tink. The gnome's like, stabby, stabby. What's going on? And the fire guy's like, poof, not working. So they all teamed up. And it still took all of them just to get that Minotaur down a little bit. They literally had to beat through the armor, because in this system, your armor has a threshold. Say, it has a soak. It can take 20 points before it hits you, right? So if they do 20, 25 points, that Minotaur only took 5 points. And she can turn around, since she was a single focus encounter, heal herself just like with a snap. And there's 20 extra hit points. So, So when I mean single focus encanters, you can be a general encanter. You can learn all 10 of them and raise them, just raise your incantation ability, and they all go up. But you don't get special bonuses. If you single focus, that means if you choose one of the foci, the bonuses are massive.
It's wizard specialization.
Exactly. Your damage is more, you cast faster, you can cast more, you learn to double cast. It's gross, but that's all you get. You get that and the miscellaneous list, but that's it.
Yeah, there are two thoughts on that. One, not everything has to be balanced.
Right.
If somebody found a method to make a character like that that's really, really powerful, good on them.
Yeah.
Two, there are obviously counters to that. The characters that were built to fight in that arena weren't capable of handling that. But if you had taken somebody with mind magic or I don't know if heat metal is a spell, but heat metal in D&D is really good against armor users.
Yes, it is.
Like, yeah, something like that would have been able to nullify that situation a lot easier.
Well, there's something called knock plow. Knock is break, plow is armor. So
you do
a great amount of damage to somebody's armor, no matter what it's made out of. But the problem is the only other encounter, the two encounters in there were single focus encounters, fire and health.
Yeah. So they had the wrong choices for that scenario. Yeah.
So they could have just started breaking her armor and getting to the meat, literally, inside that armor. It would have been fine. Or if they had another health encounter that goes right past the armor.
So, yeah, inflict wounds, don't give a shit about your armor.
Not at all. But they were all external to internal damagers. Well, this giant armored tank bull was an internal to external damager. I got handed to Paul. He created a beast. I didn't fix it. I thought it was a great build.
So. Yeah. There, and I don't see any reason to fix that, because if that guy is playing that character out adventuring and you run into your Gorgon,
oh, yeah.
That armor's not going to help him against getting turned to stone.
Not at all. Or a hippocampi. Actually, it's going to go against you if you come across a hippocampus. That horse is going to grab you and drag you underwater and just let go.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, hope you can breathe underwater.
Soggy, I'll come chew on you.
Yeah, overall, it sounds like a fun system. I'm looking forward to giving this a try.
Right. It's like it's on the way. I've got promo copies and I sent you one.
Yep.
Just yeah, let me know what you think, man. I just really want to hear what people think about it. Good or bad.
Yeah.
I'll take
Yeah, I've been running a D&D game for over a year now, the same campaign, and I'm suffering from a little bit of burnout. So my plan was to take a bit of a break, run some other systems for a little bit just to cleanse the palate, as it were. So getting access to this one will be nice. It'll be something I can put together and run for my players for a little while.
So I hope you enjoy it. Building characters, just like building the beasties. There it happened, Jay. I was going to say something, but I completely forgot it. Just whoop, right away.
I told you it would.
We talked about levels earlier. I'd like to say it doesn't have levels. But you have to use these things called character adventure points, caps, and you can spend them anywhere. The way you raise your abilities with those, you raise your tolerances with those. You can put them directly into your body threshold, which is your health. They go in almost anywhere. So if you want to build a character that's just nothing but beef, put all your points in there. You raise your characteristic scores, which would be your balance, brawn, endurance, intellect, with those points. But saying there's no level isn't true. There's not a fifth level, but you can say I'm a 30,000 cap character.
Yeah, yeah. Every system I've ever seen that allows you to build as you want, still, like, you technically still have levels because you have to earn experience to get the points to increase the skills that you've got and buy new skills. There's no way really around that,
right?
It's just you have free form to buy whatever you want, as opposed to with D&D, as in this is what you've got at this level.
And you can judge the as a DM, or I call them guides, as a nod to Homer, Virgil being the guide.
Oh, wrong Homer.
Or the right Homer, we don't know.
Yeah, or the right Homer. I'm actually a little surprised the Simpsons never did an episode with Homer doing Homer.
I know, that would have been great. Him telling the Odyssey or something?
Yes, they should have done that. That's a missed opportunity.
It's not too late, they're back, right?
I don't know if
they have
left
never
here.
Went away.
Oh, they never left?
They never left.
Oh, wait, it's Beavis and Butthead that's back.
Yes, they are back, and it's fucking hilarious.
Is it? I haven't had a chance to catch it.
Yeah, I've been watching every episode as they come out. They're just as funny as ever.
I've got so many comic book shows to watch. I just don't have much time for anything else, like saving.
I'm not even going to get into Sandman. We'll talk about that off air. I love Neil Gaiman, but I couldn't do it. I tried watching Sandman.
Oh, I loved it. He was spot on. Oh, so your guides can judge a character's, a group's strength by their character adventure points worth. You know, everybody can get together and go, okay, together we have 75,000 caps, our group. So he can create one monster worth 75,000, or he can create three monsters worth 25. You know, and that's how he can build encounters.
Oh yeah, or do an adventure, the whole adventure, you know, give it a certain point total with the big bad guy at the end being worth 50,000 or 70,000 or whatever.
Right. It's not how much they'll get. That's just how many points you spent building that beastie.
Yeah. Now one question, do you have to build every beastie, or do you already have, I know you've got the way the stats for them in the book to an extent, but is there a quick way to put together an adventure? Say I want to run an adventure and I know this adventure is going to have, you know, I don't know, four lions and a dragon or something at the end.
Quick way to do it would be just forget about caps. have a look at the characters playing, look at their ability scores, and just create something near that. So if their check sets are around 60s and the skill sets around 75s, just do the same. So okay. Don't worry about spending points, because honestly, spending those points takes forever.
That's why I was asking, because I know that if you're having to build effectively a character for every monster, that's not really feasible long term.
Yeah, when I put modules together, they're pre-made for the cap worth. But even when I write them now for running some friends through, I build them specific because I just have a special use for this monster or beastie.
Mm-hmm. Most DMs and game masters are kind of lazy, though. We want to be able to run something, but we want to spend I'd rather spend more time putting together the story behind it and maybe the traps along the way than the actual monster stats.
I've been accused of, and it's not wrong, of spending way more time writing and creating my module, storyline, creatures, secret things, than it takes to run it. Because I'll spend 3-4 weeks writing this thing to run it for a weekend. But that's what I love doing.
Yeah, we've talked about our DMing processes on here before a number of times. Me and Chris are very, very different. I will spend a week or 2 weeks thinking about what I'm going to run, how and the story behind it and how they get to each step of the way. And then I will spend 5-10 minutes writing down those notes. And then I'll sort of pick the encounters along the way and maybe spend an hour or two putting down monster stats or whatever, traps and so forth. But I truthfully don't spend more than 2 or 3 hours total putting together an actual session other than just the thinking of it.
So,
whereas Chris does his very differently than me.
I just spend hours upon hours upon hours doing everything.
So that's like me.
And then never get anything done.
Not get anything done?
Well, I was spending a lot of time trying to like plan out like a Frostmaiden campaign and like get everything prepped for that, and then like my players would just go the complete opposite direction of how I wanted to go. When I was playing 4th edition, I'd have to spend probably about 40 hours every week just to plan, build out, and get everything set up to run a game. Because like I had to build the maps out, I had like a tile set that I had to use, and I had to tape everything together, and then I had to get all the monster stats together. Because there wasn't like a complete system to kind of like where I could go and get everything. So like if I wanted to, you know, have a map that had like a pit in the center, I had to find the right tile piece for it. If I didn't have the tile piece, I had to find an image and tape that to the board. Now with Incarnate and the, you know, vast array of resources that are out there, that time that it takes me to find a map that I want to use or get the module built on D&D Beyond, it's just there and done. You know, I don't have to spend any time on it at all anymore.
My favorite map building thing is Dwarven Forge.
Yeah. I use Incarnate a lot right now.
Yeah.
For stuff.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Incarnate.
Dwarven Forge is you guys familiar with that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
The maps that you build on your table, the 3D resin things, I would build them and then take a picture of them and use that as the map. And if they could come over to the house, it was in the basement on the 4-foot by 8-foot table, ready to go. So I still love it.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it. Incarnate, it's a website. You could pay $25 to get a year subscription to it. So it's relatively cheap, and the mapping system, the ease of it, like it works just beautifully.
Incarnate.
Incarnate.
All right. I'm going to look that up. So that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yep. They just added, they provide all the art assets, which is the biggest like hurdle, I think. So they just added in New fantasy set. They added in a spaceship set, like a space, like you can build space stations now.
Sorry, I just found it. That is nice looking.
And they're also adding in an old school map tile set. Like, you know how like the old like first edition, second edition books had like the grid paper look where like someone else used like a black pen to draw everything out. It's kind of very
love that look.
You can now make that look through Incarnate. I don't know if it's released yet, but it's coming soon.
Because that was the way it looked in the original modules you would get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like that a lot.
Do you guys know Waterdeep?
Yep.
Do you remember that the poster set system they came out with in the early, late 80s, early 90s?
Oh, no, I don't know that. I don't know if I have that. I don't think I have that, but yeah.
It was like 9 or 12 posters that you put together to make the large world map or something. Yeah. That was on my wall when I was growing up. I just put them up and it stayed there.
Nice.
I love maps.
Oh, yeah. Well, I spent 5 years as a professional cartographer.
Seriously?
Yes, that's what I did before what I currently do. So I love map making.
I wouldn't know the first Incarnate of that, but I'm impressed. One of them.
It was one of those things. I just sort of fell into it. I had worked as a real estate appraiser for years, and I knew people. And then, out of the blue, somebody called me up asking if I was interested in their job. So I went and took it. Let me tell you, it is not nearly as interesting as it sounds. You sit at a damn desk all day and do menial tasks over and over again, but the final product is really fucking cool.
What was that from that movie? So you're a map doctor.
Yeah, basically.
So we're actually well past an hour at this point. So let's... unfortunately, wrap it up for a little bit for right now. Okay. We have our standard things that we always ask guests to do. Jay kind of explained it before we started. Jay, you want to
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Well, you've already told us some interesting stories about your time as Game Master, but we always like to ask our guest, we want you to tell us a story of a grumpy moment as a game master. And so it could be anything that you could think of off the top of your head where you were running a game and a player did something that just screwed you over. Maybe a die roll was horrible. It could just be something you don't like about a system. It could be something you don't like about a specific game world. Just something that makes you, as a game master, grumpy. And if you need a few seconds, that's okay.
One of the most, I wouldn't say it was upsetting, but surprising moments was, I thought I was being brilliant, and they had to get into a special back room in a pub. It was the entrance to the Thieves Guild. They had to get in there, and I created a password. And I thought, there's no way anybody could think of this. I didn't write it down. I didn't tell anybody. And the informer said, you go in there, you give them the password. And they're like, what is it? I can't tell you. You have to figure it out. And there were clues around, but they never said, I look around for clues or I start digging through things. And one of my friends, just on a whim, walked up to the guy in front of the wall, because the wall opened, and he said, I'm looking for professional weasels. And if that wasn't what professional weasels were. And I'm like, where the fuck did you hear that? He goes, I don't know, man. I just thought professional weasels was a good word for thieves. It's like, son of a. And the guard's like, okay. And open the door.
That is the weirdest, just most random thing than for anyone to have thought of.
But he just said it. It's like, I just thought that would be the perfect thing to call thieves. I'm like, yeah, me too. That sucks. I mean, I'm glad, but damn it, go in there. Do your thing.
And at that point, you have to pull a Christopher and rewrite the whole adventure since you weren't expecting them to get in there.
Yeah. I wanted them to bribe or fight or something. I shouldn't have put a password. I was like, nah, there's no such, nope, that's not it. I should just said no to everything they said. Yeah, hindsight, yep. Right?
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, as a DM, you could have just said, no, that's not it. But I probably would have I would have done the same thing you did. Like, okay, yeah. That's it.
I was stunned. I'm just looking at him. We were kind of fresh, too. So that was, we were probably playing for about less than a year, maybe 10 months or so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was early.
That's why I thought I was being brilliant. I got this. I didn't want to figure this out. Because when you started DMing, you're like, yeah, I know everything. I can do this. I got this.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah. Then you learn very quickly whatever you've got planned, your players are going to fuck it up.
Yeah. They're really good at that.
Yes, they are.
But that's what I love about it. I like being surprised. That's why I was a teacher for a while, because kids will say the damnedest things.
Yep. All right. So the other thing, the last thing that I would like for you to do, we've introduced you to Craig, and we're building Craig's backstory. And I know I told you some of it before we started this thing, but I'm going to go through it again. And the idea is for you to just give him another piece of lore on top of all the lore that we already have for this guy. And at some point, we're actually going to put together a physical character sheet of him and release it out to our listeners. So Craig is a full orc barbarian who has an older brother named Trevor who likes to beat him up. Oh, by the way, earlier off air, we mentioned that he plays the percussion. No, that is incorrect. He is a flutist because Trevor beats him up because Trevor doesn't like that he plays a flute. Orcs play drums. So he is a flutist who has a fairy girlfriend named Flicker, and he likes to collect sharp, pointy things, specifically knives of all different types. And along the way, he killed an ogre and turned his head into a bag of holding. I know there's a few other tidbits to his backstory that I have forgotten that I wrote down somewhere. Don't know where I put it. So what we'd like for you to do is just add another piece of lore to this guy.
Well, I had something all planned until he started playing the flute instead of the drums.
Yes, well, sorry about that.
That's okay. It's one of those grumpy Dungeon Master moments. You just took a turn we didn't see.
Yes, yeah. It didn't occur to me until I started going through the spiel the second time about him not playing drums.
Let's see. I'm going to go with the sharp pointies. He likes sharp pointies, which I like sharp pointies. The amount of knives in this house is ridiculous. But his favorite collection of sharp pointies, he keeps in a small box. It's a little bone box that has a smiley face on it. And when you open it, it's the clippings of very sharp toenails of his greatest enemies. They got to be pointy, though. Okay. They can't just be rounded edge. They got to be very pointy toenails.
Yeah, so he takes the clippings of the big toe, because, you know, like big toenails, those will cut you, man. Those things hurt.
Yes. That's his prized pointy collection.
Does he tell anyone about this collection?
I don't know if he does or not. At least he doesn't chew on them.
Well, that would be weird. At that point, I'd have to make a whole different character than what I was planning. His charisma went from like a 16 down to 7 or 8, maybe.
Yeah.
speaking of charisma, I meant to ask you this earlier when we were talking about your game. Do you have charisma as a stat in your game?
Charm.
Or a variant of charm. Okay.
Charm.
So it's still sort of based off of 6 stats, like D&D?
It is. It is.
Okay.
Pardon me, I'm joking here. What a drinking. Messed up. So we've got awareness, balance, brawn, charm, endurance, image, and intellect. And all of them you put points into except for image. You roll it and you're stuck with it. Now...
What does it do?
Image is just how you look.
Oh, okay.
It's your image. And the rest of them, you get a minimum, and you can put points in and raise and lower. Image is only changed by enchanted items, or there's an ability called alter appearance. But you pretty much roll your image, and if you roll a 12, you can be like, oh, shit. Or you can talk to your guide and like, yeah, I didn't want to be that ugly, man.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's very, very old school D&D right there. Just you're stuck with what you roll on this.
That's how I started playing. We didn't do the... Later on, we did all these weird, you know, okay, you roll three charts and choose the charts you want, or you can roll this chart and then trade 3 points or something. We started, we rolled the die, bam, strength, bam, five. He's not a fighter, you know? And we built our characters around it, and it was fun. And every now and then, we go back to that just because it's interesting. I played a character, I shit you not, when I rolled, everything was a 10. I got all 10s, but like 111, and I named him John Q. Public. Because he was just your average person roaming around going, I'm going to be an adventurer.
Oh, God. You're the guy from Idiocracy.
Yes.
I don't remember his name, but yeah, it's that guy.
Yep. He turned out to be a pretty good adventurer.
Yeah.
His luck was insane.
Yeah. Well, James, it was great having you on and talking about your system.
I appreciate it.
Again, just so everyone knows, again, it's sourceofepics.com. You can pick up the book from there. That's the limited edition box set. You can also get the book from Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And Amazon has the better printing, as you said.
Yep. And DriveThruRPG.
It's going to be up on DriveThruRPG soon.
All right.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate this.
Yep. Thank you for joining us. Good chat.
All right. Have a great night.
All right. Let me get rid of Craig here.
Bye, Craig.
You can
enjoy those toenails.